If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
Knowing all the old timers when I first started in the vineyard management business and just hearing all the stories of the way the Napa Valley used to be.
I grew up loving wine and being around people that really loved wine. I think I had a moment when I realized the power of wine.
All of those things get me excited, and plus, I really enjoy drinking wine.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 453. This week we feature Sean Lepasek, co-owner and winemaker at Rock and Wool Winery in Poinet, Wisconsin. After another long break without major travel, we finally meet up with a winemaker in person and on video. Sean Lepasek is co-owner and winemaker at Rock and Wool Winery in Poinet, Wisconsin. Rock and Wool is located just north of Madison, Wisconsin, surrounded by acres of farmland. The weather in this part of the world can be unforgiving, but Sean has managed to make it work by producing some excellent wine. Should you try Wisconsin wine? Yes, in fact, you should never pass up an opportunity to taste what's new to you. You can also hear Sean on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term beast. Well, it's been a while, but we are live, or at least live on tape, for the first time in a while, and we are in Wisconsin, Life Between the Vines' home state. We're here with Sean Lepasek. Sean is the winemaker and co-owner at Rock and Wool Winery, and we're near Madison, probably about 20 minutes outside of Madison.
20 minutes from Madison.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So what is the town we're in right here?
Poinet, Wisconsin.
Poinet. This is great to be here. It's great to meet you. Thank you very much for welcoming us out here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. This is fun.
First thing I want to say is I come into this space, and the people who see the video will see it's an incredible space. This is a barn that, was it 1919 it goes back to?
About, yeah, I think 1918, 1919 when they completed it.
It's an incredible barn. It's brought back to life with such vibrance. I mean, sometimes people think about cobwebs and dust, and this is anything but. It's beautiful. You've taken advantage of every interesting characteristic of the space. So congratulations. Beautiful space.
Thank you. When the barn was first built, it was the biggest barn in Columbia County. And when my father, and I talked to my father about possibly doing a vineyard, a winery, the barn. And my main thing was like, we have to keep the integrity of this barn. Yeah. It is everything. I think barns are the skyscrapers of Wisconsin.
Well, I agree. And there's so much history, and we have this habit in America of tearing down old buildings, which we shouldn't do, especially ones that can be preserved. So again, my compliments.
You guys Thank
have you. Done a great job. So, but let's talk about the winery. First of all, I'm going to go to the name, an unusual name, mm-hmm. Rock and Wool. So how did that come about?
So my parents used to own the property. They bought it in the mid-80s, and they raised sheep here. The soil is incredibly rocky. That's why I first thought maybe we could do grapes because of great drainage. But my parents at the time had called it Rockin' Wool Acres. Hmm. And once I decided to do the winery, I thought, you know what? I've got to keep that name as an homage to them for all the hard work they've done. So Rockin' Wool Winery came out of it.
Makes a good sense. Plus, it's unique. People see that and they're like, okay, what's that all about?
It is.
Curiosity.
It gets misspelled rock and roll or rock and, but we get past that.
Yeah, I think I came close to saying it a few times.
You're very close.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, speaking English is a second.
You know, it's not that important anymore.
No, it's not. Well, let's go to the subject I like to ask everybody about. And I think people who drink wine love to ask other people the same question is, where did your wine thing come from? Was there a moment? How'd you get into
Yes. I was in Madison. I was just about to start graduate school at the UW. Took a bartending job and had a glass of white Zin. I know you're not supposed to say it, but you know, I grew up in Wisconsin and you know, almost everybody just drinks beer, mixed drinks, things like that, and I was not a drinker and had a glass of white Zin and I just, oh my gosh, there's a lot going on here. Took me about 2 months to get to dry wines, but I'll never forget that time in my life because all of a sudden, something opened up. you know, it wasn't like, you know, I was still young enough that like a lot of guys are just drinking beer. And something about wine, it's not just drinking, it's not just about the buzz. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a fantastic feeling, a euphoria when you drink wine. But it opened up to me, you know, I have a lot of background in creative writing, and I like to do that. Wine to me felt the same way as writing a story. Every sip had nuance and possibilities, and it could go any place. So drinking wine felt like writing creatively to me. Sipping it, wondering the history, how it, you know, was made, who made it, all those things, just a myriad of possibilities. And I don't believe there's anything else, any other beverage in the world that gives you that, that wine does. That every sip is a story, you know, with only an ending that, that I or the person I'm drinking the wine with are going to finish or complete. I still think that. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. Wine is magic. And it just, yeah, it was that. It, with White Zin, which I will not drink anymore. But but you know what? It was a stepping stone for me, so I will always appreciate it for that.
Everybody's got to start somewhere. And I have to tell you, I give you a lot of respect for that because many of us, me included, started with White Zin. It was a stepping stone and a very popular one.
Right.
And you're going to find people all over that are going to say, thank you, really
right.
appreciate it.
Yeah, but, well.
So what made you decide that you wanted to be in the wine business from this side of it? Because it's a very different place to be.
Well, so I ended up in Chicago through a myriad of job, and I was bartending. And I ended up at a fine dining restaurant, and I, you know, obviously still had my love for wine. The owner there started realizing that I had a pretty good palate for wine. So next thing I knew, I was going to the international tastings in Chicago, picking out the wines for his restaurant, some of his friends' restaurants, putting together the wine list, yada, yada, yada. But for me, having that creativity, I've always wanted to, like, create something. And that was always in me, like, man, I'd like to make my own wine. I'd like to kind of try to get these flavors that I really love. I love Spanish and Italian wines so much. And, you know, and not to knock on California, but I don't like fruit bombs. I don't like the big jammy stuff. And, you know, in the 80s and 90s, boy, that just seemed like all we were getting. So I really wanted to create something myself. As I said, my parents had this property with rocky soil. You know, the latitude is right there with Alsace. So I'm thinking, well, at the very least, I can make some really dense white wines that could be fantastic. You know, and a lot of that was my own naivety, not knowing a lot about growing grapes and the vines and how they take. But you know what? I think being naive about things makes us dream and push harder, and that's a good thing. So I talked to my parents, said, hey, can we toss a couple rows of wine grapes up there and see what would happen? And my father, who was this genius work person, went with the idea. And next thing I know, we've got this massive production area. We're working on this. All my life savings are into this. So I go, well, I guess I better jump full in the water yeah. all the way. And then we did. And but yeah, it was a creative process combined with my love for wine that really wanted to say, I got to try to make this.
And you were saying to me before while I was getting set up that you were selling out of your first few vintages. So was this something you're actually selling at the time, or was it a giveaway?
In our first 3 years?
Yeah.
A couple years? Oh, no, we were selling. We opened up. You know, we didn't have a whole lot of wine. And my cousins own the Passaic's Orchard, so I'd buy their cider to make apple wine. Because I didn't know where to get grapes from. You know, you've got to wait 5 years before you really have a decent crop. Because we planted right before we started creating the production area. And so, you know, if we had a half a pallet of cases of wine, I was like, oh my gosh. Well, after 2 weekends, when that's almost all gone, because the community here is excellent, especially about small business. Now, a lot of people probably didn't know too much about wine, but, oh my gosh, there's that old barn that's so nice, and I guess they got a winery, let's stop by. Well, they stop by, they try some wines, like, wow, this isn't terrible. Next thing, cases are going out the door, and yeah, we closed, I think, in 2 months our first year, because there was just no wine left. Second year, same thing. Third year, a little bit longer. But no, we were selling it. It's just, it was gone. And you don't want to be open because you have one wine.
No, that'd be bad. Did you keep any of that wine? Do you have some still that you've stored?
From the original?
Yeah, right.
No, and there's kind of a, everybody mocks me, the people around here who help, which are wonderful, but they laugh at me because in those early years, I wanted to put some wine down. Mm-hmm. I wanted to keep some wine for myself. But somebody would come like, oh my gosh, I really wanted that wine. Hold on, I've got one bottle left in my cellar. Let me go grab it. Here you go. You know, it's twofold. You don't want to disappoint anybody who's kind enough to, you know, to come to your establishment. And I needed that $20 or $10 every time. I mean, we were, anybody in the wine industry knows, this costs a whole lot of money to do. Not a whole lot of money starts coming in. And at that point, it's like, yeah, please, if I can buy one more fitting or something, here's the bottle. So, no, I do not have that. Some of my friends have some old bottles.
Mm. Oh, that's nice. Well,
but
you can make sure you go knocking on their door and see
yes,
what happens.
Yes, sometimes.
I got to imagine, just as a fellow business owner, to look back at that time where you were walking the tightrope. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm sure you're not driving a Mercedes-Benz at this point, or maybe you are, I don't know. But, I mean, look back and go, wow, I'm really glad I made that decision, no matter how difficult it was in the beginning.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, even on my worst days here, I walk around here, I look at my life, I look at all the wonderful people I meet, I look at what I believe I'm offering my two daughters. I mean, to grow up on a vineyard.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that alone just is, I'm done. I'm perfect, whatever. I've done everything I can. Because I'm assuming for you, just as myself, can you even imagine if you would have been born on a vineyard?
Oh, no.
Or the winery?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Yeah, so... No, I don't regret any of it, and I don't regret, in fact, I applaud the fact that we had no money. You know, a lot of wineries, and start off with some people who've got some good money, good backing behind them. We didn't, so I had to learn to make wine in a lot of ways, very stripped down, but ultimately that has made me, at least I believe, a much, much better winemaker. Because if I can make a decent bottle with just some, you know, cheap, crappy equipment, once we, you know, have some more funds, but then you never forget any of those processes.
Never.
You know? It's like the guy who started, like I did, started making wine in 5-gallon carboys. I'll tell you what, you learn a lot, and then that way you're not afraid to make a lot of different wines, and they will go bad, and they'll be bad, but nothing teaches you like failure. So obviously I've been taught a lot, but... yeah, I don't regret any of it, and I'm so happy it happened exactly the way it did. You know, I got old-looking and grayer because of it, but, you know, I drank wine, so who cares now?
Well, that's true, and I have to say, I mean, look at Robert Mondavi. He lived to a nice old age, his brother mm-hmm. Peter. I mean, a number of winemakers live for a long time because
right.
you want to keep drinking that stuff.
You do. I like that, yeah. And you never stop working. You never retire.
Well, and that's it, too. It's the most, what's the term, you know, physical thing. You're doing this all the time.
Constantly.
And of course, you have the mental part, and maybe that's good stress in there somewhere. You took this barn, and you have a number of different tasting spaces here.
Mm-hmm.
We're in kind of off a side room from the bar. You have an upper area here, and again, we'll have some pictures of this on the website. It's got so much character. This definitely, I'm not even kidding, gets you into the top 10 in my book.
Wow.
Well,
thank you. You've been to more than 10 places already.
I've been to 7 or 8,
okay,
I think.
Okay, well,
yeah,
wow,
yeah.
That's high praise. Thanks.
But it's just, when you walk in any place, the first thing you do is you smell the grapes. You smell the wine. The
mm-hmm.
second thing you do is you feel the atmosphere. One of the things I admire is that this is a family effort. How old are your daughters?
6 and 7.
Do you have them do some work around the farm at all? Or
next summer, they've both been told they will stay home during the summer and, you know, give me 1 or 2 hours in the vines because it is a family thing. And
sure.
I love that Wisconsin family work ethic where if you're part of the family, you're part of the workforce doing, I mean, you know, they're still going to have their childhood and things, but we have to take pride in your family and work together. And I think that can only make people have a great success in the future.
I agree. And one of the things that you promote heavily on your website is that you're making wine from Wisconsin grapes. And if I'm not mistaken, it is exclusively, is that correct?
Oh, yes, yes.
What is it that you love about Wisconsin grapes that makes them so attractive to you?
Well, that I have a Wisconsin winery. I mean, you know, if I could have a whole field of Tempranillo, would I? Oh, God, yes.
Mm.
But we live in Wisconsin. And, you know, you talked about the term before I started, this is terroir. to me, a winery is different from a wine bar. Okay, if I was buying California juice, put in a bottle, fantastic, but I'm a wine bar. I'm a winery. Winery to me needs to represent the land, the culture, the people, the work ethic. It has to. That's why it's magical. So for me, it was just naturally like, if I'm gonna open a Wisconsin winery, I wanna use only Wisconsin grapes and hopefully more in my own local area, or at the very least, which I do know all the farmers and talk to them about what they're growing, because it has to represent us. I don't wanna represent California. I don't wanna represent Washington State. I wanna represent Wisconsin. And to me, that's why somebody should buy the bottle, because like, oh, you know, you don't wanna just drink all, you know, French Bordeaux's, you may want that Italian. And I feel that's what Wisconsin can offer. Like, okay, so you've had your California, you've had Oregon State wine, well, try this, you know, Wisconsin. And when I first started this, and it's probably still true, I think most people kind of think of Wisconsin as, I hate to say joke, but kind of a joke for winemaking. Oh, it's gonna be sweet, everything's sweet, they be this juice and blah, blah, blah. And you know, don't get me wrong, there's some amazing winemakers out there. Philippe from Wallersheim can forget on one day more than I'll know my whole life about winemaking. But I wanted to really make some dry reds, some dry whites, something serious. We're not going to stop here until somebody in a Chicago restaurant, New York restaurant says from the list, oh, I'd like that Solitude from Rock and Wool. Not because it's Wisconsin, but because it's the best damn red on the list. I can't achieve that with California grapes. I can achieve that vision and that dream with Wisconsin. And it's gonna tell everybody who we are. And it goes back to when you talk about this barn. Once again, we didn't have a lot of money, so what'd we do? You know, like this room was built after that room because I never thought we were gonna be open in the winter and this busy. We built the balcony after because we had to accommodate people. But that being said, I knew right away that this winery, the tasting area has to represent who we are, right? We're not stainless steel and cut marble and, you know, these French decorations in our place. Looks beautiful, looks wonderful, but that's not who we are. We're a Wisconsin winery, there's Wisconsin grapes. Any friend I know or have up here usually helps pick, helps build something, because I have no talent. I have all my friends build stuff. And that's what this, so, like you said, and it makes me happy that you recognize that right when you came in, that you get the feel, right? The family feel, the Wisconsin feel. That's who we are as a winery. That's what our wines are in the bottle. That is our culture. That is our land.
Well, and that brings up the question of the wines. What, just if you could walk through the list of the specific grapes that you are growing as well as making.
Sure. We grow Marquette, which was, when it first came out, was supposed to be the most promising red grape for Wisconsin wines. It's dark, it's rich. It doesn't like to grow, so it's tough. We have Frontenac, the red. We have Frontenac Blanc, and Frontenac Gris. They are a little bit higher in acidity, but we find if you let them stay on those vines till October, we can make some beautiful wines with them. Le Crescent, which I think if we could ever get it growing properly and more, I think that will make white wines that will rival anything from Germany or France. I truly, truly do. Beautiful tropical fruit flavors. And we've got a smattering of other ones, but those are really our main grapes, the varietals that I like to work with.
So how many acres are you, and you, I believe you said 40 acres you have, but to vine?
Right now we have a little more than 6 acres of vines. And then we have contracted out 4 different vineyards that work with us. And, you know, we've got another area where we want to plant, but we kind of want to take our time. But the 6 acres gives me the amount of grapes I need for my estate bottles that really matter to me, because if my family's on it, it's going to be estate.
Well, for people to understand, and many people have been listening to this podcast, no, 6 acres is a lot to farm. 1 acre is a lot to farm. Are all the other vineyards that you're taking grapes from, are they in this close proximity or different parts of the state?
Different parts of the state, yeah. Which we found we had to do. So we have about 2 that are in pretty good proximity to us. Then I have one down in the Janesville area, She gives us great Marquette. And then I've got two that are more northern located. We kind of had to do that because we tend to get a late frost. This year we got it. You always get one Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. We got one 2 weeks after. It was just brutal in this area. But by reaching out, so Janesville, they didn't receive it. And northern Wisconsin, they have a later bud break. So that late frost doesn't bother them as much. So having it from different areas a little bit for the climate helps ensure that we will have grapes all the time from Wisconsin.
Cool. That makes good sense. Now, the West Coast has started white harvest already. Where are you at in terms of harvest here?
We will receive from Janesville some white grapes this Saturday. This is about not quite a month earlier than we ever have taken them.
A month.
The heat has really been pushing them. Mine are still going to stay on the vines till October. That's just, I want my asses to be dropped to nothing. You know, I'm not afraid to worry about the frost. But I never want my growers to have to worry about that.
Sure.
They don't need to lose sleep on their grapes.
Yeah.
Because, we only use Wisconsin grapes put us in this situation where our growers know we have to have their grapes. You know, some places will like say, well, I'll buy your grapes, but if I don't get them, I'll just get juice. Our relationship with our growers has to be very tight.
Nice.
And really understand, like, you know, if they come to me and say, wow, Sean, in our harvest, we didn't get the numbers we really wanted, I'm still going to take their grapes. Because that's what you do.
It's good business.
I think so.
And it's farming, too.
You have to understand farming.
Right. And so many times we talk about this. You guys are farmers. This is about the dirt. This is about the grape. This is the whole process. I'm going to go back to Marquette for a minute.
Please.
I just had one, a bottle recently, not from Wisconsin, and I was really impressed by it. And this is the thing I always wonder about, getting people to understand, try these wines. You don't have to like them immediately, but try them. How does that work out? I mean, you're part salesman somewhere along the line. How do you convince people who've had only French wines or only West Coast wines or whatever?
We would go down to Chicago. My wife worked down there in the beginning time of our opening. And I'd take some of my Solitude, which is a state-grown Marquette, and I'd take it in bottles without a label. And we'd meet some people she knew who kind of related to the wine industry. She said, oh, hey, come on, try this. What do you think? Oh my gosh, is that kind of a mid-area Rhone? Because I'm getting some really Grenache types. I'm getting a little Barnyard. Like, that is beautiful. I said, that's Wisconsin. They said, bull. And then the fun part, then they'd always say, well, can I get a couple bottles? I'm going to this wine taste. I want to pour it for people and not tell them what it is and have them guess. So things like that.
Yeah.
Around here, the main thing you have to do is try to get people to start trying dry.
Yes,
I understand. That's the thing. And to everyone's credit around here, we started high up on the sweet level for that Germanic palate everybody seems to have. And every year we've tended to lessen how much residual sugar is in our sweeter wines. And people more and more are really coming to the table like, you know what? That off dry you make, I really like that. And that's fun. To see their eyes open up as they realize, wow, you lose that sugar, there's some flavors opening up, and I make them have it with food. I just do.
Sure. That's a good way to do it. And you're educating. That's half of what your job is, to educate people.
Yeah, why not educate your surrounding, because then you make them your market.
And wine in Wisconsin's come a long way.
It has gone
from being a beer-swigging state to, okay, maybe wine hasn't taken over, but in many retail locations, you see a lot more wine than you used
really
to.
Do. Yeah. You really do.
So it's interesting. As a winemaker, you have unique challenges between weather and the physical plant, everything you have to do. Many wine areas deal heavily with politics, and I don't want to get into anything so much in terms of everyday politics, but doing what you need to do, is it something a little easier to do here? You're north of Madison. You're in real farmland. I mean, we got corn. We got alfalfa here.
I think the farming, I couldn't speak to the farming in Dane County. I'm assuming from the people I know, like, yes, it's easier. Structures are easier a little bit. And, you know, COVID showed us we're on a lot of land, right, and spacious. So that helped us during the COVID. So, yes, being on the land, the farm, but it's a give and take because, you know, you're also in a rural area. And, you know, when you try to say, oh, my gosh, as the climate's changing, things are tough, you know, there is no such thing as climate change. And I think anybody who farms grapes wants to punch those people because we know firsthand things are changing. So you don't get the sympathy up here as you would in Dane County where more people say, oh, yes, but it's a give and take. But I don't, most of the politics we've had to get licensed stuff has been pretty nice because some of the people on the boards and stuff are local farmers. So they come out.
They get it.
And we're really agro-tourism. You know, we're still considering that. And that's been really beneficial. So I guess that has made it a lot easier. But we do get people who kind of get the farming, like, my gosh, you work your butt off, and let's try to make this easier on you. So
yeah, it's a tough life, for sure.
It is.
Even if it's wine.
Even if it's wine. But I don't have any complaints about how officials or anybody's treated us. Everybody's good. Been pretty good.
It's good to hear it. So, who's your mentor? Who's the person that influenced you the most to go down this path? Or where you're at in the path?
That's a tough one. I guess my desire to do it was always myself. My belief that I could do it probably was with my father, seeing what he built with his friend here. Like, you know, like, gosh, we can do this, you know. He can make anything happen. I told him my ideas for the trellis system. It's kind of different. He put it together. He learned the pruning before I learned the pruning. So he makes me a believer every day that we can do this. He's 76 and he works circles around me. And to this day, I still like, okay, we can make this happen. Things bad happen, but boy, my dad, he can keep this going. And I'm going to give a shout out to Philippe from Wallersheim. My dad and I would go to conferences, and for somebody as successful as Wallersheim, Philippe's still coming, talking about the grapes and the wines to make, and about how, you know, we're all in it together and making it wine country. That always sparked me, like, saying, okay, you know, he's talking to us people who probably have no right being in the same room with them. So I give him a lot of credit, and, you know, he taught right away because I came into this. Like, okay, I'm only making dry wines. I'm not making sweet wine. I'm definitely not making fruit wine. And then you hear Philippe like, hey, sweet sells. You want to pay your electric bill? Sweet sells.
Boy, that's a huge statement right there, yes.
And it does. And our most popular wine we sell is our raspberry. And when I would have started this, I would have said, nope, not going to do it.
Sure.
No
sure.
way am I making raspberry wine. And that was ignorant on my part because what I've learned with the sweet wines, they may not be my cup of tea, but that white Zinfandel, right? That sweet wine gets people into it, and you see that smile on their face. They're enjoying something. I mean, and it's different from other things, and they're enjoying that experience. We've taken it from the angle, like our Bowhunter is a very popular wine. It's a sweet red, but we use our best Frontenac grapes. It seeds 2 to 3 different types of French oak. So we approach it, let's make them a very serious sweet wine. Really respect them, not just take some crappy red and dump sugar in it like a lot of places sure. will do, and that's fine, makes it, but approach it like, this is sweet, you could still have this with steak. Because there's enough nuance, there's enough things going on with that oak and the tannins and the weight of the grapes. So these sweet people have made me, I guess, maybe a better wine appreciation, right?
I think that's very cool that you admit to that. I'm going to pause for a second here just for our audience in case they're noticing. We have a thunderstorm pouring through, and you're probably hearing a little bit of that rain dancing on the roof. It's something to hear you say that and admit to that because you're right, people will look down their nose. And in the end, what, maybe 7-8 years ago, people looked down their nose at rosé, and rosé's a monster now.
And it should be.
Yeah. I mean,
it's the greatest thing on earth.
Yes. It's really a wonderful thing. So as the storm continues, it makes me think about the idea of challenges. You talked about frost. Wisconsin weather can be very unique. Not just frost, but heavy snows when you don't expect it. And now, because of climate change, we do have some weird periods. Okay. We have ourselves a good storm going on out there. So where are you at with this?
Well, first off, frost is everything to us, basically. I'm going to have about 10% of my crop, if that, this year.
Really?
We had 2 days at the very end of May, 26 degrees for 6 hours, the frost. That's a freeze. You know, people always go, well, does that... I go, let me put it like this. If you went to lie outside in that, you'd die. So if you die, imagine what their buds are doing. That's always our first concern. Because do we even have buds that are going to turn into grapes? After that, we're very lucky. We've got really big winds, as we can hear. So we don't really get... We're not worried about rot. If we do, we can handle that. Hail damage is something we worry about a little bit. I'd say, but basically, our biggest thing here is the frost and the birds.
Yeah, what do you do about birds?
Well, we put squawkers out, and we also net our end rows, and that seems to help out pretty good. You know, the main thing is to break up that bird cycle. So if you do that, they don't go over. So we've been pretty good on that. The very beginning, we didn't know a lot about it, and we took some hits. You know, some people complain about the hail damage here, but we're pretty good on that. But really, the frost and but it is the winters. Only one winter did the polar vortex kind of hit us, and we had some damage. But that was a perfect storm because then that spring we had frost, freezing, and lots of rain that came in February and March. So much so that the soil was saturated, so the vines couldn't push out the water during the freeze, so we lost half our Marquette.
Oh, wow.
Imagine this. 10-year Marquette. Trunks split. And we didn't know it until coming harvest, like, why aren't these grapes? Because they were slowly dying.
Yeah,
farming's tough, but
yes.
I guess it's that thing where maybe that's what helped us. You know, I know a lot of businesses had a hard time through COVID. I think people who farm always assume you're going to have a bad year, maybe 2 years, so you try to keep your surpluses and you can weather it out because you know what's going to happen. So maybe that's a benefit from farming. You know you're going to have bad years that are just going to kick your butt, and it's what it is. It's just what it is.
Well, then, maybe not related to this, maybe so. I don't know. What makes you crazy about the wine business? That could be positive. That could be negative.
Oh. Well, I don't see a whole lot of negatives. I just don't. My wife, I had to convince her this is going to be something we could do. And so she knew it was going to be work. I knew it was going to be work. I knew there were going to be lulls. I know owning your own business, you never sleep. You carry everything on your shoulders. Everybody thinks, oh, my gosh, you got this. How nice is that? Well, yeah, it's nice, but, you know, there's a trade-off. So I don't begrudge the wine industry anything, because if I didn't have my eyes open going into it, then I'm a fool. Not that I'm not a fool, but on that, I knew it was happening. So what makes me crazy about the wine industry is the people. Just seeing the people come in, and they sometimes act like you're their best friend or family. And after years, I kind of feel like I am. But because you're giving them something that just makes them squeal with delight. I mean, we have a sweet red called Stalwart, and we have a wine club, and we usually make enough for our wine club. And just recently, a woman said, oh, my gosh. Do you have one more bottle? I know you're out. I said, I think I've got one myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, wow.
Nice.
That I can do that with a bottle of wine. I mean, I don't have that ability with my personality to make anybody happy. So if I can do that with a bottle of wine, it's really nice. And that's what I think is crazy wonderful about it. And I hope my girls get a chance to see if they continue this, if they want to. I hope they do. But if they don't, but to have a chance to make people you don't even know that happy. That's a nice thing. That's a really nice thing.
That's why wine is cool.
Wine is magic, my friend. It really is.
Well, with that in mind, I'm sure you've done plenty of interviews, media, that kind of thing during your career as a winemaker.
Mm-hmm.
So my kind of patented question is what's the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Wow, that's really tough. You know, no one ever asked me, you're around wine and booze all the time. Is that a problem? And honestly, I would say it can be very easily. When we first started this and I was up by myself, because my family's still in Chicago, I'm used to drinking wine when I cook, with the meal, socially with friends. So when we started, I didn't have a lot of staff, so I'm in the store. Well, everybody comes in, doesn't want to just try wine. They want to have a glass of wine with the winemaker owner.
Sure.
And when you're not used to that, next thing you know, by the end of the day, it's like, you're sloshed. And I think for a while that was a problem, like, oh my gosh, you know, well, I got to be this person, I got to be, you know, and then you realize right away, well, I got to pull back. You know, this is going to make me not enjoy wine. You know, because I'm not one of those people. The only thing I ever drink in my life, if I'm by myself, is wine, and if I'm cooking, I have a meal. But so it was kind of new for me to have, you know, glass after glass. But no one's ever asked me that question. And, you know, to me, that's one where it's like a lot of winemakers or anybody who's in the alcohol business, you know, especially when you're small and people come in, I would think, do people ever have to deal with that? Is that something you worry about, think about? Pull yourself back. Luckily, I have a beautiful wife and two young daughters, and I want to see them focus on them. But that's a question no one's ever asked. And it was something, honestly, I could see could get out of hand. You know, I don't think anybody likes to talk about that, honestly, but.
No, but you did. That's an excellent answer. Very good.
So.
Yeah. Well, I've continually mentioned that we're in the middle of a storm, which is unique. I can't remember too many times we've done interviews in a storm, but it's made it that much more fun, especially being in this very cozy barn. Again, Sean, you have a great place here. I think it's really unique, and I do look forward to tasting your wines. But most importantly, for our listeners who want to learn about you, first thing is for tasting, can people just belly up here? Do they need to have a reservation? How does it work?
No reservations needed. That's not who we are. You come in. We've got three different tastings set up, eight samples for $5. You can try all of them, any ones you want. Nope, we don't need reservations. We have enough area, seating areas, bar areas, just come on in, enjoy yourself.
And for our listeners who would like to learn even more, what is your web address?
Sure, www.rockinwoolwinery.com. So just our name, R-O-C-K-N as in Nancy, wool as in from sheep, winery.com.
Excellent. Sean, thanks for taking the time with me today. Appreciate it. A lot of fun coming here to visit you.
This has been great. Thank you.
Learn more by visiting rockinwoolwinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2021.